Great. Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Okay, so now I'm going to take you back to Europe. We're going to go to Italy. And I will tell you a story that happened in Italy around the period we are discussing, 60s and 70s. and it's a story that I'm glad to say that has various resonances with what we just heard, at least, or not least probably, for the sort of big ambitions that you will see represented in some of the drawings that I will show you. On purpose, I'm not going to show you any interior images, and that's also something somehow interesting as a contrast to what you just showed us. There's not much phenomenology in my description of this story. It's a story that revolves around a narrative of proclaimed refusal of the campus, as the title goes. A refusal of the campus as understood as an ideal environment for understanding this thing that we call the university. It's a story made of contradictions, oversimplifications, ambitions, heroism, skepticism, self-referentiality. Probably every story is like that. And it's a story that merges and also confuses somehow the preoccupations and urgencies of architects with the preoccupations and urgencies of a discourse about how to reform higher education that was very much central in the 1960s and 70s. So we have to start from that moment. On special occasions, a topic can channel interest and attention to such an extent that all the artifacts that are produced in that period cluster around it. Between roughly 1963 and 1977, I would say, at least this is my historicization of it, this topic was higher education and its reform. Innumerable drawings of new universities populated the drawing boards at the time. Statutes and laws were debated in parliament to set up new universities around the world. Already by the mid-1960s, countries on either side of the Atlantic were provided with brand new academic buildings and settlements, often of a very large size, and that were updating the stage for the imminent unrolling of 1968. The centrality of the topic in the architectural discourse of the time was probably best encapsulated in this article by historian Joseph Rickford, who precisely in 1968 claimed that universities had become the paradigm or archetype of all that was being built at the time. Let's go to Italy then. Italian architects started tackling the reform of higher education and its possible spatial design with some delay compared to other countries around the second half of the 1960s. If we compare it, for instance, to the UK, in the UK they had already been debating within the architectural community the same topics around the late 1950s. The Italian one is a story that unfolded among an ultimately inconclusive parliamentary debate on higher education reform that started with a reform proposal presented to Parliament, this one in 1965, and that was eventually sent to oblivion by the joint forces of political disagreement on one side and the death blow from the student movement's project of total opposition. By 1970, without guidance from government, a parallel and almost independent debate unfolded among the architectural community. And here we see a page from a magazine, a main magazine of architecture in Italy, Casabella, that is documenting a conference on university design held in 1970. The architectural community, to be sure, did not really have any previous experience in the design of universities, nor had a clear and agreed tradition onto which to tie the creation of new academic environments. So instrumentally, they took the new brief as an excuse, really, as a testing ground, eventually mostly left on paper, to advance their own more general preoccupations about the survival of architecture as a fundamental agent in the definition of the city. Or, to put it in other words, they were reclaiming the equivalence of architecture and urbanism against growing threats that were coming from other professional fields, from engineering to planning. Following an initial stage of study in the form of research projects that were done inside architecture schools to investigate the international scene of university planning and design, as the first book is titled, edited by Giancarlo De Carlo, who is probably the most known architect in Italy that dealt substantially with the problem and the project of universities. The testing of ideas was then facilitated by a series of national and international architectural competitions that were calling for restructuring entering, expanding, or even founding new universities around the country. Here I would look briefly at four major ones for the universities of Florence, Cagliari, Calabria, and Salerno that were all launched between 1970 and 1973. And by looking at them, we can also capture a more general picture of the changing architectural debate in Italy at the time, building upon and aiming to expand the post-war preoccupations with an expanding urban condition in the country. Through the medium of the university and of university design, the focus started shifting from the heroic, positivist, still modernist visions of territories controlled by the architectural drawing, to a growing suspicion against the architectural drawing itself as a means of control. This, coupled with a shifting mentality from form to system, saw architectural design reduced to the orchestration of technological units on a checkerboard, or at least this is the way I will tell the story as it unfolds from Florence to Salerno. Let's start with the scientist's dream or American campus enchantment. Try to imagine how different from the one we have a university would be in which nothing was ruled, but everything was always under experimentation to find more efficient methods of teaching. How different a university without faculties as we conceive them today, but only institutes with numerous professors that governed the university by getting together in temporary committees. How different a university in which industrialists, farmers, bankers, professors, and students alike took an active part in its administration. How different a university in which professors were obliged to leave and spend the whole day in classrooms and laboratories. How different a university in which those professors did not have any side professional job and received salaries comparable to those of the director of an industry. And if we go to the very end, how different a university in which life could happen within a beautiful campus, among trees, flowers, good libraries and laboratories, and far from the noise and the distractions of life in a big city. In these words, uttered by an Italian scientist whose name was Adriano Buzzati Traverso, we can see an unmistakable American influence. He was struck by the American university and he was struck by its environment, the American campus. In fact, Traverso was just coming back from an experience as a visiting professor in the States, in the University of California, which he looked at as a sort of opposite, really, of the Italian situation, which he was not very shy in naming a fossile denutrito, which means an undernourished fossil. Basically claiming that there was a mediocre level of teaching, a high degree of absenteeism by students and professors, a lack of proper university life, old-fashioned curricula, and archaic forms of academic government. But let's look now at the architect's polemic at the same time, or no to the concentration campus. We don't agree with those solutions to the problems of the university that conceive it as an island and that rely on transport networks and on the contiguity of uses as the only means to connect it with an external condition. Given the size of the site indicated by the competition brief, it would be not only impossible, but also wrong to conceive the new University of Cagliari as a zoo for teachers and students located within an area of 400 hectares. We reject a university outside of the city, a splendid isolation of magnificent architecture, an updated version of the Temple of Knowledge. Being outside of the city means being outside of culture. It means inventing culture as something different from life, as academia. We reject the campus as a place of alienation. No to the concentration campus. So quite a different take emerges here, at least in terms of the narrative about the campus that we just saw being hailed by Traverso. The voice this time, as I said, is the voice of two architects, the occasion of these two small texts. They are coming out of two of those architectural competitions that I already mentioned in the early 1970s, in particular for the universities of Cagliari and Florence. Now, the scientists' positivism leaves place to the architect's skepticism. The Italian university, they are claiming, cannot be a revised American version. So it cannot be an ultimate campus. It cannot be a campus such as something that was somehow codified in this way in a book called Campus Planning that came out in 1963 in the States, written by Richard Aubert. Having a page like this, calling it the Ultimate Campus Master Plan, that is represented basically as a tray of verdure and cars offering academic retreat inside individual built masses, matching the various ingredients that make this thing that we call a university. But for the Italian post-war architects, actually the refusal of the campus had also deeper meanings that were tied to recent memories in the political history of the country. The idea of concentrating all university institutes on a single modern site could only be appraised and justified by the political and ideological climate shaped by fascism. These words were uttered about 35 years before, in 1933, by Marcello Piacentini. Piacentini was the key master planner and architect of Benito Mussolini. And he was the architect that planned La Città Universitaria di Roma, the only really modern university to be planned in Italy in a long time. It was crystal clear in that sentence in stating the identity of a principle of concentration as both ideological and spatial, its application being a perfect work of art like the Città Universitaria that himself he planned, that was built at record speed of just a few years in the early 1930s. So the university for the architects of the 70s was not to be a campus. Yet, so it was not to be something concentrated. Yet when we move to the drawing board from words to facts and we look at some projects, how to understand a project like this one, authored by the self-same person that had uttered refusal of concentration and isolation that was against the zoo. If anything, this photo of a model, of course, of a competition entry by Giuseppe Samonà that was not built for the University of Cagliari sends one message. Whatever the university is, it must be large and must be somehow concentrated, a vast ordering of the urban landscape, a finite figure. Its vastness contrasts with some more conservative and nostalgic views discussed in conferences in the 60s on how to reform Italian higher education, among other people, not architects. We believe in the unique and precious role of small universities. For this reason, we claim that before building new, petty, incomplete, isolated universities, it is necessary to pay as much attention and care as possible to the existing ones, whose roots lay deep in our history and traditions. The image of such smallness, of such university, is somehow in the map of an Italian medium-sized town, in this case we have Florence, and the argument is that university and town are continuous and have to be like that. And not coincidentally, this image comes from the book that I showed you by Giancarlo De Carlo, who, more than others, will exactly reclaim such continuity between city and institution and propose actually the dissolution of the mass university across the urban field. On an international perspective, and we have, of course, to understand the Italian case within a wider spectrum, those words of praise of smallness that we just wrote were also set against that very American university that had struck our Italian scientist and that had been theorized by the president of actually the same university where the scientist was a visiting professor, the University of California. Clark Kerr, in 1963, published this book, the same year, again, 1963, as Daubert's book on campus. And in this, he discussed the uses of the university by introducing a concept that he called the multiversity, which he defined basically as a large, incoherent machine overrun by administration and corrupted by its ties with the outside world. So that's quite the opposite of any pastoral dream of an uncontaminated academic bubble. But the American university was not the only reference in the 60s, of course. A different, at least allegedly different, argument to the large multiversity coming from the States was coming from the UK, where options to reshuffle and democratize the Oxbridge elitist tradition were debated as a spatial problem inside architectural publications since the 1950s. The result of the discussion were seven new universities that were planned in the early 60s and all built and opened by 1968. All of those were located outside of more or less minor towns around the country. And they were created as sort of detached islands of purity for an increasingly diversified and libertarian community of students. That community of students that somehow can be found in Philip Larkin's poem Annus Mirabilis, Sexual Intercourse began in 1963, again, which was rather late for me, between the end of the Chartered Liban and the Beatles' first LP. It did not take long for critics to this view, and of course there's a lot of modernism in those campuses, to come from the inside of the profession that produced such images of the universities as this one that we see here. The housing of a major activity, such as education, should be viewed in architectural terms as a demand to increase the availability of such a service on a national scale, though its dispensation may, through necessity, require a limited locale. This would appear to be in opposition to current higher educational practice, where the containers are dressed up to look like a medieval college with PowerPoints and are located in gentlemanly seclusion. These fantastic words are uttered by Cedric Price. And his polemic of medieval colleges with PowerPoints preluded to his own counter-project, Potter's Thingbelt, a territory of nomadism for an academic community that started envisaging the upcoming prospect of a university no longer serving some fixed and secure positions in the job market. A university for student entrepreneurs, to anticipate the terminology that fits the contemporary corporate university of the 21st century. The weather argument of Price's project, that was represented in this way, connected to the idea that, after all, architecture is not really enough. The solution is not always the building, however big it might be. Hence, the praise for other learning media to free society from the straitjacket of the education work pathway of the past, simply because such pathway did no longer make sense as a possibility, really. And it was necessary to embrace precariousness and transform the student in an entrepreneur at the constant search for work. If that is the upcoming reality, Price's argument would go, you might as well use the university as a training ground for that, which eventually is the final merging of town and gown, where the distinction of the university as a special moment of incubation or of parking in wait for unemployment is dissolved. Let's move to Italy, a new dimension. Price paved the way for an understanding of the large scale of higher education. In turn, the Italian postwar architectural debate had developed exactly all around an understanding of the large scale. Yet, its own interpretation of the same topic did not refuse architecture as the answer. Actually, it proposed architecture as the answer. In fact, the project by Samonà, that I already showed, was one instance of this opposite. And it was not alone, actually, in such endeavor that had been pursued since the late 1950s within a debate that revolved around the topic of so-called city territories, la città territorio. New dimensions since the 50s were emerging and were being diagnosed by the Italian architects in the post-war years, as is testified by architectural publications like these ones of the early 60s. At the same time, a mixture of anxiety, worry, and poetry received the impending urbanization of the country in, more generally, the world of culture, of arts. From literature, in a book about building speculation by Italo Calvino, the concrete rush at taking possession of the Riviera, to popular music, where once was grass, now there's a city, quite a bit of anxiety in that. To then the poetic attempts to understand these new dimensions in the famous great cinema of the time in Italy, such as Pier Paolo Pasolini's Mamma Roma and the Peripheries. In the aim to battle an urbanism of numbers, of planning, Italian architects claim to act like urbanists themselves, because after all, the city is a physical fact that needs architectural intelligence to run across scales. Around this belief, a constellation of major texts, such as this one, blossom in the 1960s. Of course, the most famous one is The Architecture of the City by Aldo Rossi. And they were all trying to discuss this thing that we call the urban through a juxtaposition of politics and architecture, plus various extradisciplinary excursions into the hot fields of the time, structuralism and phenomenology in particular. Theorization went hand in hand with practice in the search of what are the devices to actually build a new urban dimension. Around the 50s, the main devices were new neighborhoods, because that was the main urgency to reconstruct housing, basically, after the Second World War. In the 60s, attention turned into the problem of what were named centri direzionali, business districts. Actually, we started understanding that the tertiary sector was growing, and we needed to build a house for the tertiary sector. In 1962, we read shopping centers, universities, cultural centers, and public buildings will all regain their formal importance. They will be the monuments of a wider metropolitan territory that will be marked by an impressive public transport network capable of augmenting and multiplying movement, contacts, and the participation of every man to the spirit of the new city. These words are written by Aldo Rossi, they could have been written by Le Corbusier, they could have been written by Sant'Elia, any of the early modernists, even though we are talking about a postmodernist or whatever that means. And in these words, he was envisaging the possibility of universities to act as major new monuments in an expanded urban field. It would take then the whole decade to properly start tackling the problem of university design. And here we see the number of publications that emerge, written by the architects, on the problems of university design in during mostly the last bit of the 60s and the beginnings of the 70s. So we are back here for competitions, or for form to system. We are here back in around 1970. By then, the universities had become the paradigm also in the Italian architectural discourse, and they were ready to absorb the late modernist faith in the power of design and mediate its gradual crisis towards outcomes of nostalgia, resistance, or fiasco. And with fiasco, it actually all started, at least according to some international perspective. British critics, here's a page from the Architectural Review, received the first of the competition for the University of Florence, as a fiasco, because they claimed the Italians were doing nothing else but repeating the mistakes of the UK and basically sending their universities in exile outside the city. Yet, the competition for the University of Florence set the problem in quite a different way, and with quite another higher, surely too high, ambition than mere relocation. By creating a new academic settlement outside the historic center, where the university had dwelled for centuries, the opportunity or the excuse was created to start vast territorial restructuring. The competition request, in fact, was not just to design a university campus, but was really to design a regional plan. And this is what the first prize did. Here we see some images from the project by Vittorio Gregotti and Edoardo Detti, who won the competition. The university in these drawings almost disappear, really. I mean, which one is the university is hard to understand. But I think this is the interesting bit of my presentation, which is to understand the large scale of the university as really a territory. So the university is understood as a piece of infrastructure that is crossed by traffic. It is mixing inside and outside of the city up to the point that, at least this was the aim, to overcome even this distinction and think of cities with no outside somehow. As I said, is crossed by traffic. It's mixed with leisure and commerce. It had a shopping mall inside, so it's corrupted. It's crucially non-residential. Hence, it is traditional for Italy. In Italy, we never had residential universities. So it's part of a large scale, we could call it urban ballet, going back and forth from home to the university, that contrasted the more famous, radical in its nostalgia version of a sidewalk ballet that was envisaged by Jane Jacobs in the 1960s as the fight against the very transformation of the villas through the death blow of the modernist dream of unimpeded flows that here is celebrated. But even inside the very competition, the inner polemics to it did not result in mere nostalgia. The second prize, of which here we see images, by two architects, Insolera and Cervellati, who were soon to become masters of historic centers preservation and renovation in Italy, claimed the political, polemical, violent role of universities towards reality. They represented the university in this way, with this collage, and the university for them was nothing but a big roof. They were joining the attack to the isolated campus, and their proposal was of not building anything, really. Not building anything on the competition site, but firstly setting base in the very center of the city, Florence, and this was not just a claim for the good old small Italian university inside the town. Setting base inside the city implied the demolition, the violent demolition, of a way of building the city speculatively. In fact, the large roof was meant to replace parts of the city that had been built through urban speculation in the 19th and 20th century. In general, consensus was far from being the reality among the competitors. Gregotti claimed that the competition brief could be built, and he showed us how. In Soler and Cervellati, the second prize claimed that any building should be oriented to make a statement about the city even before than about the university, because in fact nobody really knew what a university was. Hence, designing it was a contradiction in terms. Others went as far as questioning the very role of architecture and the architect, as we see here. Another major architect of the time in Italy, Ludovico Quaroni, somehow said the university cannot be really drawn. The only thing I can do is diagram it for you as a graph, as a process, rather than as a product. Moving on to the radicals of the time, ArchiZoom also took part in the competition, and for them, information was everywhere. And any project for the university that did not understand these would inevitably be an island, just one more piece of a never-ending urban field. In their drawings, that were a testing ground for what then became their famous polemic called No Stop City, diagnosis and prognosis mixed to the point of becoming one and the same thing, and the project, understood as the anticipation of a future, was declared totally futile. The university for ArchiZoom could not but be everywhere, could only be everywhere, because information could only be everywhere. The representation of this is in what they call the surfaces of continuous information flows, which, to be sure, are not confined to a gesture of Florentine radicality, but permeate more widely the architectural thinking of the time, also by non-official radical figures. Here, in fact, we see something similar in a zoomed-in portion of another project, this time the winning project, the winning entry for the second of my competitions for the University of Cagliari. Just like in Florence, the zoom-in is just an excuse. While promoting academic activities as something that unrolls within an environment made of repetition of generic rooms, that makes away with the hierarchies of a traditional campus and takes on board the logics of a factory floor, the problem lies elsewhere at another scale. And again, this is the scale. It's the scale of a vast urban territory that is restructured because of the excuse of designing a new university. Anversa Ferretti's project drew this as an archipelago on a new territorial armature, or within which, again, the university does not pop up as a sort of the only monument. And it is under this light that then we can understand the project by Samona, of which I showed you the photo of the model before, which received the second prize at that same competition. It was the runner-up, so to the first prize that envisaged an archipelago, and it countered it with the single figure. Again, governed by repetition and genericity, for an understanding of higher education as an increasingly generic activity, rather than as a specialized and designable set of activities. But just when the discourse on a possible divergence from the campus solution was being shaped, with all these contradictions, naive heroism, oversimplifications, the campus appeared as a specter. At the following competition, in the southern region of Calabria, some form of isolation of the self-contained residential compound was inevitable because of the context in which it was being inserted. Calabria, at the time, was one of the most economically and socially depressed areas in Europe, devoid of any proper infrastructure, not just of transport infrastructure, but in terms of an institutional milieu that could nurture knowledge. So a new university there had necessarily to be a complete settlement. And in fact, differently from the previous competitions for Florence and Calabria, the brief itself called for residential accommodation within the university. The competition spawned Italy's most known university project, that is probably the one that most resonates with what we saw in a previous presentation of the Canadian project, is the 3-kilometer-long academic viaduct, designed again by Vittorio Gregotti, who won this competition also, and interpreting the architect's theorizations about what he called an anthropogeographical architecture, basically architecture being concomitantly analysis and projection, being about reading and measuring the landscape without ending in camouflage, but creating what Gregotti calls the double of an existing formal condition. Of similar grandiosity as Samona's entry for Cagliari, Gregotti's bridge literally and symbolically proclaimed the university as a piece of infrastructure, serving a large territory and extending as much as possible. More than oriented to the well-being of its interior community, actually even being disquieting towards its interior community, being uncanny, the university spoke to a vast external condition, aiming to both comment on it and alter it. Besides Gregotti's, a lesser-known project by Guido Canella, who didn't win, added further argumentation to the anti-campus sentiment. Exploding the settlement into many elements placed as much as possible close to other existing industrial and residential environments, the project devised what Canella called a base camp, intended as the ignition element of a wider conceptualization of higher education that for Canella worked, again, at a regional scale, and it was aimed to redeem a depressed social condition. And in fact, Canella's references included Franz Fanon's The Wretch of the Earth, but also the Cuban alphabetization campaign that we see represented in a photograph from the research done by Canella on higher education and published a few years later in 1975. More generally, Canella talked of il sistema dell'istruzione, the system of learning, that went well beyond the confines of any academic compound, be it a building or be it a whole campus. His project stemmed directly from his personal academic experience in a different environment in Milan, and the contestation that was going on there around 1967, 1968, and the early 70s, when Canella was among the faculty members who supported the students' experimentation of a different way of imparting higher education, to his own detriment, because he ended up being suspended for 3 years from his academic post. Here, too, the image in the mind of the architect projected outwards to a whole regional territory, using the university as a catalyst for industrial development that could counter the top-down, eventually sterile, injection of large industrial plants of the petrochemical type, promoting instead an activation of the local population, and in this way a project similar to Price's own pottery steam belt in the UK, yet less dependent on the potential of a former industrial legacy that was present in the north of England but was not in Calabria. Now, the first competitions were blessed by a level of indeterminacy, somehow, whilst lamenting, as they did in these articles, the lack of guidance from the government, the architects were really secretly glad of being left with a blank slate onto which to project their ideas, while also pessimism, of course, reigned as to the actual capabilities of implementation of their visions. The third competition for Calabria signaled a switch towards precision. The brief clearly articulated an idea of the university that was much clearer, much more closely aligned to a model, in particular the Anglo-American model of a residential collegiality. Yet the entries still maintained their level of independency, still using the brief as a testing ground of ideas more generally applicable to the built environment. In Gregotti's words, in fact, the university was a settlement principle, even before being a specialized question. The fourth and final competition with which I close, for the University of Salerno, pushed precision to its heights, switching to a technology-oriented systems approach that put the accent on the performance of what we could call a well-tempered environment rather than on other architectural preoccupations. Now everything was defined in a brief that specified to the detail all the components of what should be a university. This left the architect with little other choice than merely orchestrating units on a checkerboard. Unsurprisingly, an engineer won the competition, his idea of the university being now encapsulated in a sudden change, not only of scale, but of approach. This is now how the university is being represented, no longer a master plan at a regional scale. Against these, the attempts by others, here we see the runner-up, to retain some wider architectural reasoning that could have resonance with the ideas of typology, morphology, that were an important line of reasoning that characterized an important part of Italian post-war discussion, were left just as a sort of desperate message of nostalgia. Epilogue, or self-referentiality and arrogance. If an epilogue to the story were to be found, then it would be of no surprise to locate it as a project, not for the university, but as a project more generally for the city. This culminating outcome is called Proposta Architettonica per Roma Est, architectural proposal for the East of Rome, that is a collage city proposed, presented the 15th Milan Triennale in 1973, when the Salerno competition was happening, by Carlo Amonino and Costantino Dardi. It ideally closed a loop that was started by Amonino himself in 1961. In the classrooms of the School of Architecture in Rome, where a design studio had investigated the possibility of a città territorio, a city territory, to be designed by means of large structures, defining a territory of formally contrasting parts, where the point was that public intervention should be aimed at counterpoising order and example to ongoing private speculation. Together, Aimonino and Dardi had been the most diehard participants in the competition. They took part in Florence, in Cagliari, in Calabria. They didn't win any of those. Perhaps they were prevented from participating in Salerno simply because Aimonino was part of the jury there. In the three competitions, also, they unashamedly, stubbornly, always reproposed the same idea, the same scheme of a university design as large juxtaposed amphitheaters, incredibly big, that became bigger and bigger as the competitions unrolled. So at the beginning, they were originally part of a wider archipelago of elements in Florence, and they ended up being the project itself at the end in Calabria. The fragments that were assembled in their proposal, in their proposed Architectonica in 1973, included also their own project here, alongside many other projects, such as Rossi's competition project for the Centro Direzionale in Turin, Le Corbusier Latourette Monastery, the famous Karl Marx Hof in Vienna. This was univocally confirming a belief that the only possibility left to architecture for avoiding the triumph of privately driven urbanization was to claim its self-referential nature at a monumental scale. This city of monuments was also the swan song of a short-lived moment when the university was believed to be one among such monuments, yet one that was concomitantly not self-referential because of its inevitable and necessary ties with the other bits of the archipelago. But translating self-referentiality from a formal principle to an institutional one is perhaps too difficult to avoid. And in this context, the retrospective words written in 2000 by Giancarlo De Carlo sum up our story. Like at the end of the 1940s, at the end of the 60s, it looked like all common places on which the old world had been grounded were on the verge of collapsing. It was as if we had arrived at the threshold of a new world. At the turn of the 60s and 70s, there was a strong civic sense, and the university had been put into deep crisis by the student revolts. Then the institution recovered its old position, reaffirmed its traditional arrogance, and broke its pact with society. The university has not only gone back to what it was before 1968, it has even worsened, because its expansion turned it into a gigantic and detached body that suffocates the city. Students are considered but a mere accident. They could be totally discarded if it wasn't for the fact that they are essential for the reproduction of the system. Thank you very much. Thank you.